Blog Talk Radio.
The Moxie Fix.
The
Moxie Fix.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, boxing fans of all ages, we welcome you in one more time to another edition of The Boxing Fix on Blog Talk Radio and LeaveItInTheRingRadio.com. As always, I'm your host, Joel Sebastianelli. Joining me for a little while this evening will be David Chen. David's doing double duty on the switchboard and also going to be co-hosting the show for a little while, as Josh McDaniel will be a bit of a late arrival this evening. He'll be coming up in just a little bit. David, we had a pretty solid weekend of fights. Nothing to speak about of note on Friday night. It was totally dead. But inside the ring on Saturday, we had some solid fights that had a lot of good build-up before them, too. And I thought, in my opinion anyway, especially Chambers and Adamek and Chavez Lee, they definitely lived up to the expectations.
I think so. And in the case of Andy Lee versus Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., before we even talk about what actually went down in these fights, I just think it's nice once in a while. And some fans were the ones who brought this to me, but it's nice to see a fight that basically ended normally, the way a fight would. No controversy, no drama attached, just a simple boxing match between two honest guys.
Yeah, and I'm going to get back to that point in just a couple minutes when we go over that fight in about less than 5 minutes, because there definitely was potential for some controversy. All judges had Andy Lee up 4-2 at the time that fight was stopped, and perhaps I'm crazy. I thought Chavez won almost every single round in the fight, save for the first and the third. But anyways, we'll take you through the boxing blitz. Quick look at all of the results from this past weekend of fights. Of course, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., the fight that everyone is talking about, picked up a TKO in round number 7 against Andy Lee. Looked absolutely fantastic. He is steadily improving, and I think he's beyond breakout potential now. He has broken out, and he's going to be a star in this division very, very soon. Also on that card, Miguel Vasquez picked up a unanimous decision victory over Daniel Attah. Attah was just completely overmatched, wasn't he?
Definitely. I mean, it's not even a matter of pitting someone with the pedigree and record of Miguel Vasquez with, I think it was 10 losses of Daniel Attah coming in. It's not even a matter of that, because we've seen guys, underdogs, who could do very well as long as they're matched properly, as long as they got the opportunity. But this case, it was simply a world-class boxer with world-class skills going through the motions, sticking to the textbook, and nothing of note to mention. Everything went according to, quote-unquote, the plan for Miguel Vasquez.
Absolutely. I'm sure that's what they had in mind at top rank. Too, in the middleweight division, Abraham Hahn improves to 17-0 with 11 knockouts. Halfway through the fight in round number 4, he knocked out Joseph Gomez, another fighter who was totally overmatched, much more so than Daniel Attah. Gomez was down 3 times in round number 3 and once in round number 4. Dropped 4 times in 4 rounds, just thoroughly dominated. That would hurt to watch. Robert Marroquin also picked up a victory. He knocked down Arturo Santiago twice in round number 1 and once in round number 2 to pick up the knockout victory in round number 2. Casey Ramos improves his undefeated record to 16-0 with 5 knockouts with a victory over Arthur Trevino in round number 5. Pretty solid undercard Top Rank put on.
Definitely. Top Rank generally does these pretty well. I have no problem with their actual events. Their business practice, however, are a completely different topic. We won't get into that.
Yeah, well, just about everybody's gone into that over the course of the past week. I would also say that they're brilliant businessmen, even if you don't particularly like the way they go about it, which I'm not saying that I do. But you got to give some credit where it's due, and I think that Bob Arum, every single action is thought through, and every single action has an opposite reaction that tends to work in his favor. At the Prudential Center in Newark, New Jersey, Tomas Adamek picked up a unanimous decision victory, relatively close fight against Eddie Chambers. Some people thought Chambers had enough to win. Not a lot, though. I saw a few people out there with draws. I would say Joseph Pasquale and Steve Weisfeld, their 116-112 scorecards in favor of Adamek were perfect. Alan Rubinstein, on the other hand, 119-109. What fight was he watching?
Well, can I just confirm that, by the way, you explained that just now, that you agreed that Adamek is the winner from this fight?
Yes.
Okay. Well, the question I'll ask you is this. Even though you thought Adamek won the fight, do you still think it's important to bring up a bad scorecard if it's one that you do not agree with? Is it as important, even if it didn't change the outcome of a fight, to address bad scorecards, again, even if it's not a robbery?
Absolutely. A bad scorecard is a bad scorecard. You know, a crime is wrong, even if nobody's looking, and it's not a big deal. It doesn't matter. It should be addressed, and I think it needs to be addressed even more so in a fight like this, because you're showing these judges, it doesn't matter if it's a high-profile fight, if it affects the fight. If you have a bad scorecard, it's a bad scorecard. It's totally wrong, and it does need to be addressed. Rubinstein should be reprimanded somehow. Now, of course, it doesn't mean that we need to beat it into the ground with a shovel like we have with Pacquiao versus Bradley, but it's definitely worth addressing. Bryant Jennings in the heavyweight division picked up a win over Steve Collins, a unanimous decision win. Collins, another fighter, just thoroughly dominated. The poor guy didn't stand a chance.
Yeah, it's really tough for me to watch those kind of fights. I mean, as a fight fan, I'm generally not considered a bloodthirsty type. I respect the sport. I respect the fighters. I like the fact that they put on a show of skill for us as entertainment and as a way of earning an honest living. And it's the hardest thing for me in this sport is to watch somebody who's outclassed, who's in there struggling, who's having a horrible time, and most likely incurring injuries for no reason. It's a sad thing to watch for me. I don't know what else to say about that.
Yep, Jamal Davis on that NBC Sports Network card also notched a unanimous decision victory over Dorel Casaquillo. In other news, on Saturday, in the United Kingdom, there was a card that had mixed reviews. It had so much potential, and it didn't pan out, especially in the super bantamweight fight between Scott Quigg and Rendell Monroe. That fight ended just after three rounds. Monroe was badly cut above the right eye from an accidental clash of heads. It required 9 stitches, and always unfortunate whenever there's a premature stoppage to a bout, especially since that fight definitely could have had some fireworks.
Definitely. I mean, obviously, there's frustration involved. Everybody at home either take the time out that night to watch a fight, or even more so, the guys in audience paid good money to come see a fight. But still, we have to understand, as fans of the sport, I think everyone should agree that fighter safety is first. And even though a fight might not carry out to its natural, entertaining conclusion, protecting the fighters is very important. I mean, it doesn't help anyone if for the sake of our entertainment, these guys aren't able to fight. It takes a long time for the world to produce good fighters like these that we want to watch. I think if everybody just calm down a little bit, just protect our fighters, let these things take their course.
Of course, no argument there for me. In the light middleweight division, Ryan Rhodes looked solid. It was a relatively even fight, but the veteran was rocked with a body shot in the 7th round, dropped it down, and Sergey Rabchenko picked up the TKO victory in round number 7, improving his undefeated record to 21-0 with 16 knockouts. That was a good knockout. Like I mentioned to you before the show, before we were on the air, I love body punches in boxing. To me, there's nothing more exciting to watch in boxing than somebody who just ruthlessly attacks the body. And even though Rabchenko didn't exactly do that, what can I say? I'm a sucker for a knockdown or a knockout with a body shot, and that's as good a one as you're ever going to see from Rabchenko. Rhodes had no choice but to stay down for the count.
Yeah, I think you make a good point, and I think this is going to become a nice debatable part of our Andy Lee versus Chavez Jr. Conversation, but there is such a divide in boxing between preferences for head-stamping shots and preferences for body attacks. I think there is very little middle ground there. There are guys, a lot of guys, in both the boxing press, the boxing community, and the boxing world in general who prefers one over the other, and it leads to a lot of arguments when it comes to one's outlook on a particular fight. And I think Andy Lee versus Chavez Jr., especially the scorecard issue we're going to talk about, has a lot to do with that.
Uh-huh. And the judges, not just the fans. They are not weighed evenly in the judges' minds. It always makes for an adventure of sorts when a fight like that goes to the scorecards. Glad it didn't, although the scorecards were relatively on point for that fight. Two of the judges had Rebchenko ahead, and one had the fight a draw. That was, again, in the light middleweight division. In the Richard Towers-Gregory Tony fight, also on the undercard, it was a TKO in round number 9, a victory for Towers. He's now 14-0 with 11 knockouts. And Martin Murray making his return in the middleweight division. He improves to 24-0-1 after a points decision over Kareem Ashour. But Martin Murray is a guy from the UK that I always enjoy watching. What's your take on Murray?
I don't really have much of an opinion yet. I mean, at the risk of sounding snide, I don't really have much of substance to say until I see these guys in really deep at the world class. Because as a fighter, I certainly respect what he does, and I certainly think he has skills. But there's not much I can say without a solid baseline. You see what I mean?
Well, he did look pretty solid against Felix Sturm. A split draw at the end of the year in December. Two of the judges had that. Actually, no, excuse me. One judge had it for Murray, 115-113. One for Sturm, 116-112. And Pasquale Procopio had the bout even at 114-114. I think he's solid. Perhaps borderline top 10 in the middleweight division. We'll see where he can go from that, though, because he's going to need to step up and face guys that are a lot better than Kareem Ashour. In Italy, Domenico Spada picked up a unanimous decision victory over Maru Sandreski. Not too much to talk about there. Solid fight. If you've seen Spada fight before, it was just like another one of Spada's fights over in Italy. He looked relatively decent. Over in North America, once again in Mexico, at Playa Mamitas in Quintana Roo, Mexico, Carlos Cuadras picked up a victory over Javier Franco, a knockout in round number 5. That fight was on Televisa. Also on that card, Gilberto Ramirez Sanchez picked up his undefeated victory, adding another win, 22-0 with 19 knockouts after a TKO in round number 8 against Isaac Mendez. That was for the WBC Youth World Middleweight title. I'm always confused with these youth belts, though. I think that's a little bit misleading. Do you really need to look any further for the argument that we have too many belts in boxing when we're giving out youth belts, too?
I mean, not only do we have a lot of sanctioning bodies, but it's the WBC we're talking about here. If we wanted to talk about all the random stuff they do to add unnecessary complexity to the sport, we'd be sitting here all night. We would need a special edition just to cover everything that the WBC have done. They got the champion belts, right? They got the diamond belt. They got the youth belts now. They got a million different titles. They're collecting million different sanctioning fees. I mean, at the end of the day, it's honestly not as complicated as it seems. The WBC just wants to make money. They want to attach titles to names and so on and so forth. It's not that complicated of a business plan. It's just annoying coming from a sports perspective. We like to see who's the best and everything else be damned.
Oh, yeah. And we don't have enough time to talk about Jose Sulimano. We can't even give a Reader's Digest version because it's going to take all of 2.5 hours to go through everything that Jose Sulimano has done. But back to the positive in boxing, Jason Litzau, he's been off the radar for a while. He picked up a TKO in round number 1 against Ira Terry, dropped Terry twice. That bout was in Minneapolis, Minnesota at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. But with that, that does it for the boxing blitz. Actually, one more fight to mention as well. Holly Holm picking up a victory in the title belt. She is a new champion, definitely one of the better female fighters of all time. Nice to see her back in action and picking up the win as well. Very, very happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. A little bit later on in the show, we're going to talk about father-son relationships in the sport of boxing and just how integral some of them are. As some partnerships have worked, some have not. We're going to talk a little bit about that. We'll have plenty of rants and raves. Still going to talk a little bit about Pacquiao Bradley, but mostly talking about Pacquiao Bradley because I don't want people to talk about Pacquiao Bradley. I'll rant all about that. I'm just about through with that topic of conversation. But first, the Julio Cesar Chavez fight against Andy Lee. We were in a bit of a disagreement about this one. I thought that this bout was a fun one to watch, save for the inactivity in the first couple rounds. I also thought that Chavez won just about every single round of the fight, except the first. But regardless of how you had this fight scored, you had to be impressed with Julio Cesar Chavez Jr.
Well, here's the thing, right? And we were talking about this a little bit earlier, and I don't know if I, quote-unquote, like the fight as much as you do. And part of that is because the way I watch Andy Lee fight, the guy has always been frustrating for me personally. I'm sure he is that way for a lot of people. I don't know if he's that way for you. But here we have a guy who, in my opinion, loses fights or struggles in fights that he should do well in, right? He's one of those guys who's got so much good potential on paper, yet doesn't really translate that into success in the ring, which goes to show that you might have all the natural talent in the world, but boxing is still a skill-based sport. It's not something that's min and max mathematical-based, like weightlifting, for example. There is a bit of intangibleness to success in the boxing ring. That's why not every tall European heavyweight becomes a Wladimir Klitschko. That's why not every guy with fast hands become a Roy Jones Jr. There's still a bit of hidden knowledge to it. And Andy Lee showed that he doesn't have this hidden knowledge. And we can get more into that later. But let me get back to what I was saying originally, which is the fight was more a exercise in frustration for me. Whereas you saw Chavez Jr. having success, I saw more of Andy Lee letting Chavez do work.
Okay. I suppose that's fair. I see where you're going with that. Like I said before, I am a total sucker for a body puncher. I absolutely love it. And I would go as far as to say that Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., at least in my eyes, based on my criteria anyways, I think is becoming one of the most exciting fighters in the sport to watch because it's an absolute thing of beauty. He goes downstairs to the body. It's a relentless attack, and as soon as you start defending to the body, boom, he'll pop you upstairs with an uppercut or with a straight. It's such a mixed, varied attack. You can really tell he's learning from his father because his father's left hook to the body was dynamite, too. It's like watching one and the same when they're inside the ring.
It sounds like you're pretty high on Chavez Jr. What is your opinion on the topic of the fact that Chavez Jr. outside of Mexico does not usually get the quote-unquote best reception from fans around the world, some people perhaps thinking that he's made more of a opportunity of his name more than anything else. But is it time to, whether you like him or not, or whether you think it's fair or not that he's got these opportunities, to just recognize the kid does have skills in the ring?
Did you watch the fight last night?
Oh, I did.
Yeah, that answers your question.
Right.
Absolutely.
But boxing fans are talking about, Joel. Boxing fans are talking about. They don't want to give somebody credit. They never will.
Yeah, that's very true. You know, I rode Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. for the longest time, too, because I thought that he was just a product of a name. Now, I thought Sebastian Zbeek, I thought he'd win that fight, but I thought it would be very close, and indeed it was. I thought that John Duddy may give him a little bit of trouble. I thought that Troy Rowland back, this is going way back on the undercard of Pacquiao versus Cotto, I thought Roland gave him a little bit of trouble, and it was, you know, only like a 6-4 fight, maybe 7-3. But as I've seen him fight, but Peter Manfredo Jr., to me, that fight, it's not just because I'm Rhode Island, and what do we have in Rhode Island? We've got just about nothing. We've got Vinny Paz, we've got Gary Belletto, and we have Peter Manfredo Jr. It's not just a hometown thing. I was genuinely impressed with the way he looked against Peter, and that's one fight that I actually thought Peter Manfredo Jr. would have a chance to win, too, and he blew him away. He looked really, really solid. Against Marco Antino Rubio, he looked really good as well. He doesn't need to go out and earn a shutout or earn an emphatic early-round knockout in order to get credit. If you just look at his whole body of work and you look at the talent besides just the fighters that he's fought, and forget about the record, just look at the talent in the ring. He has natural talent. He has natural ability. And there are very few fighters in the sport I would rather see fight right now than Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. And we're going to get an opportunity, in theory, at the Thomas and Mack Center on September 15th on a pay-per-view against Sergio Martinez.
Well, what about the idea also that Chavez Jr. tends to fight more often than a lot of these other guys do today as well? For someone with the type of name and so-called coddled publicity, you would think that he would be cherry-picking his way to get a good record. But the kid does stay busy. He's making up for the fact that he doesn't have an amateur background by learning on the job and getting better all the while.
It's the way it should be, in my opinion. I think you can only benefit from fighting a lot like that. It's work experience. It's just like, you know, I would say in the business world, people who have had experience with internships – are typically better on the job than people who are just doing it for the first time. You have experience working in the industry. You know, boxing in the gym and working the heavy bag and working the speed bag, that only does so much. Sparring only does so much because sparring is sparring. It's not a real fight. Even if you're only fighting little four-round bangers against people you pulled out of the bar across the street, there's still something to be said for getting in the ring and putting your professional record on the line. It's a learning experience, and I think it's a reason that Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. has progressed the way he has compared to fighters who are content to only fight 15 or 20 fights in the first 5 years of their career.
Now, here's a question I'll pose to you. Let's say if Junior wasn't who he was, right? Someone who a lot of people thought for a long time was nothing but a name. Let's say if Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. was some other fighter who has done the same amount of work over the last couple of years, who just turned in this performance last night against Andy Lee. Would we automatically be very excited for this kid? Like, basically the point I'm getting at is Chavez Jr.'s name and the stigma attached to it basically the only thing holding him back at this point?
Well, I think it works both ways. It's not just a stigma either. There's a lot of people who are interested in Junior just because he's Junior and because they like his father. But I suppose it depends. What I found, and it's a real shame, if you don't have a good story, it seems like a lot of times American fans just don't care about you. If you weren't raised from nothing, and, you know, fighting your way on the streets, and it's not this incredible zero-to-hero story, there's not a lot of interest in it. Or people tend to resent you like they do with Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. I don't think it's fair. I suppose it depends, but if you rate just on ability alone, I'm going to be excited no matter who's in the ring fighting Andy Lee, because the fighter in the green trunks looked really, really solid.
I agree. I mean, sports are supposed to be fair, and as sports fans, we must be fair as well if we claim to love sports for how respectable they're supposed to be. And therefore, in the boxing ring where guys put their lives on the line, we have to just call it as we see it, give credit where it's due, and then basically give the better man his just dues.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so now at this time, we're going to bring on Josh McDaniel, who just calling into the show a little bit late. Josh, how you doing?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? Man, sorry about that. I was with my grandpa at the horse track losing money, and we got caught up, man, trying to make it out here in time for the show, and we just were running late. What's going on, guys?
No worries. We're talking. We're still talking Julio Cesar Chavez Jr.'s victory over Andy Lee. What was your take on that performance?
I was impressed. I've always been one of those harsh critics on Chavez Jr. And I thought Lee was going to give it to him, man. The first two rounds, it looked like Lee was handling his. Even the third round, he looked pretty good. But he went away from staying out on the outside, and he let Chavez Jr. or Will just get inside of him at will and just tear him apart with those body shots. I think that's what, at the end of the day, was what really got Lee out of there, got him hurt, got him tired. I mean, there was a point where Lee put his hands down and did some funky thing with his head, and they stopped because of a little headbutt real quick. But I think he knew he was just too weak to go up against Chavez, and Chavez really impressed me. It was my first time that I actually could really say, like, damn, like, Chavez, he might be something. He might be something that, you know, and not just a name.
How did you score the fight? I'm curious about this. And remember, at any time, you can call into the program, area code 347-215-7598. If you didn't have your pen and pencil out, don't worry. You can check it out. If you're listening to us on Blog Talk Radio, the number's right there on the page. Call in. We can discuss this and just about whatever you want to here on The Boxing Fix, where boxing addicts come to get their fix of fights. How did you score the fight?
I know the first two rounds, I remember I gave it to Lee.
Andy Lee.
And I think I might have gave him the third round. I was looking for the paper that I had. I think I even gave him the third round, and the rest I had all for Chavez. I had Chavez ahead, though, by the time the knockout.
I had Chavez winning every single round except the first. The third's a toss-up round. It doesn't really make a difference to me what way you go with it. But to see the judges, Ray Danseco, Jesse Reyes and John Keane all have it 58-56 for Andy Lee, 4-2. It just strikes me as really odd because I'm not saying it's a horrendous scorecard, but I just don't really see it. This is just one of those fights where I saw the fight the way I saw it, and watching it again, I still see the exact same thing. I understand 3-3, but where do you get that fourth round? I just didn't think that Andy Lee did that much. We're all talking about how Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. looked absolutely fantastic, and yet the three judges and even people who are saying he looked fantastic are saying the fight was a draw after six rounds.
You know, there was a couple of rounds in there that could have gone either way, though. I thought Lee looked really good in the beginning. I gave him the first two rounds for sure. I thought that Chavez was having problems trying to get in the inside and do work. Lee was holding him back with that jab for a while. Now, granted, he wasn't hurting Chavez Jr., but he was pumping that jab out and making Chavez Jr. like think, man, how am I going to get inside on this guy? Like, this guy's really keeping me on that outside, and he can do much.
Yeah, Andy Lee is somebody who's never impressed me much at all. I remember his fight against Brian Vera in March of 2008 at Mohegan Sun. If I recall, they each landed approximately 50% of their total punches. It was just a total war, but that goes to show you not just Andy Lee's fighting style, but his defense. It tends to be a little bit porous. His chin is always there, right out in front of you, and he was knocked out in the seventh round of that fight against Vera, and now lost the second fight of his career against Chavez. I had him losing his bout against Craig McEwen in March of last year as well, in the undercard of the Sergio Martinez-Sergey Zinzirik fight. I'm not too impressed with him, but Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. going up against Sergio Martinez, now that is a fight I'm really excited to see. And I wouldn't be shocked if Chavez Jr. picks up the victory either.
I'm excited to see that fight, but I can't go against Martinez. I think Martinez is just more skilled, more crafty. He's going to come at all different angles. He's not going to stand in front of Chavez Jr. like Lee did for Chavez per se. I like Martinez in this, definitely. And I'm gonna hold my own on Martinez and roll with him all day on that one. But I'm excited for it. I think it's gonna be a hell of a fight. I think it's great. It's a great fight. It's great for boxing, you know. But I'm gonna touch on that later about, you know, the date that they that they're saying right now for it. But we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, it's good for boxing, but it's kind of bad for it at the same time. You've
exactly.
got Canelo Alvarez going up against Victor Ortiz on the same day. Golden Boy and Top Rank acting like little kids in the playground who don't want to share their toys. It's just gotten absolutely ridiculous at this point. But such is the nature of the sport. Well, we carry on. I'm used to it. Hey, you know what? It's going to be – all of those are going to be great fights. I don't know what I'm going to do. It's the third Saturday in September. I'm going to be going to the University of Florida in the fall. So we're going to have to find a way to squeeze the Florida versus Tennessee game in, along with this stuff. And I'm not going to have a DVR either in my dorm, so I'm going to be flipping back and forth between everything. But for a lot of people who don't know me, I don't host a college football show. But to me, I'm just as passionate about college football as I am boxing. I absolutely love the sport, so very excited about going down there for that. And that's another reason I was really intrigued by this fight. I love stadium fights, and to me, the Sun Bowl is just one of those, but perhaps I'm overblowing it as a college football fan by calling it one of the great pantheons of sport in America, but that place has a lot of history. And they filled it up pretty well, which just goes to show you how people are finally starting to attach themselves to Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. too.
Yeah, well, not only did they sell it pretty well, man, they sell. You got to look at it like this: they sold it without having to sell alcohol to fans. They had no alcohol at that fight. And I mean,
this is true.
And that's a hard thing, man. Like I'm telling you, if unless I'm there, you know, covering the fight, but if I'm there as just a fan, man, I want my beer, you know, and I'm sure a lot of Texans wanted their beers too, but, you know, they are hardcore boxing fans, they're hardcore Chavez fans, and they showed their support and love and came out, and that's a lot of props to them, because that was one concern of mine as far as thinking about sales-wise for that fight, like, how are they going to do it? Like, you would think, like, a lot of people wouldn't want to go. Why spend money on going to a fight when they could watch it at home on HBO and drink beer? But they decided to go out there and do it, and that's great for them and great for boxing. That's another great thing, man. Boxing kind of like turned around on this weekend, you know, went from the drama to, you know, we got some good stuff to talk about for the most part.
Yeah, there was a very high security presence at the Sun Bowl in El Paso. From what I understand, there were a lot of pat-downs, everyone checking bags. There were helicopters flying over the stadium and even snipers, I've heard as well, because they thought that there was the possibility of some violence with Mexican drug cartels. That was actually canceled for about a week, about two or 3 months ago, when Homeland Security said that leaders from both the Sinaloa and Juarez cartels might be in attendance. I highly doubt they were, but if they were, there wasn't any sort of unfortunate situation that unfolded in that fight. So that was definitely a positive as well, but oh man, I am just so high drinking the Julio Cesar Chavez Kool-Aid right now. I thought that body attack was just great. And something I was telling David, I'm just going to tell you, I know everyone else has heard me say it twice already, but I'm a sucker for a body puncher. I love when guys go to the body. And I'm curious to hear your take on this. Maybe it's just because I love the body attack and there's nothing quite like a left hook to the body. But I think that Chavez Jr. is one of the more entertaining fighters in the sport right now. Maybe not an all-action slugger like a Brandon Rios, but from a skill perspective, I just love watching this guy fight.
Like I said, I've always been hard on him. So, like, this fight was really the first fight that got me wanting to see more of him now. I still have my questions about him. You kind of said that Lee, you're not a fan of Lee. You know, I like Lee. I'm not a fan of him. But, you know, I thought he was a great opposition against Chavez Jr. I won't take that back at all because I thought, you know, he was a tough opponent for him. He's probably one of his toughest. And, but you're right. Chavez does have a great body attack. I mean, he does learn a lot from his father. I find it awkward, though, that he has a great body attack for being such a tall guy with long arms. Like, you know, he gets inside and throws great short hooks to the body for someone who has that long reach. You know, that's usually hard for a fighter to do that. But he finds a way to do it, and he looks good doing it. Or he's looking good.
Also on the card, Top Rank always has very good undercards to their show. And at the Sun Bowl in El Paso on Saturday night, Miguel Vasquez picked up an easy and wide unanimous decision victory over Daniel Atah. Neither of them really showed me too much, but it's worth mentioning. What were your thoughts on the fight?
I watched the whole undercard on Top Rank TV, and there were, you know, one thing they do put on good undercards, but I thought most of it this time was all mismatches. Even with the Atah fight, that was a widespread fight. It was pretty. It was one sided. Like, it was kind of. It wasn't too exciting for me, you know.
Oh, yeah, they were. I totally understand that train of thought. But if nothing else, they were at least good prospect showcases. Would you estimate Miguel Vasquez goes from here? Because he's one of the best fighters in the lightweight division right now. Coming off victories against MF Diaz, Leonardo Zapovigna, whatever. We've seen him a couple times on the air, and it sounds like the announcers, especially Steve Farhan, the guys on Showtime, have just as much trouble pronouncing the Aussie's name as I do. I try to be a master of pronunciation. I just can't get past Leonardo at all. He has a unanimous decision victory over Ji-Hoon Kim, a split decision win over Bradis Prescott. Vasquez is definitely for real. I'm not sure how much he's really gaining by fighting some of these guys, though. I think it's time he steps up and fights an Antonio DeMarco, a Ricky Burns, maybe even a Hammer and Hank Lundy or a Richard Abreu. He's got to step it up in competition just a little bit, and I would be entertained by a matchup with Sharif Bogeri, although both of us know that's never going to happen in the near future anyway.
Right. I like all those names that you said. I like the DeMarco fight, but DeMarco does have a fight coming up. We'll see how that turns out. Maybe this is gonna probably sound funny, but I know it's not really a step in competition just because of what this fighter I'm about to name has been happening to him, but maybe Leonardo's, maybe have him work his way up with him, see exactly where he's at, where Vasquez is at now, and then take that big-time champion. I mean, I know he's already the IBF, but and maybe get a DeMarco after that and let him and DeMarco duel it out, man. Set up a great fight like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, definitely. Also on that card, Abraham Hahn improves his record to 17-0 with 11 knockouts. Knockout in round number four against Joseph Gomez. Gomez was down twice in round three, once in round number four. Like you said, that's another mismatch. Also in the featherweight division, Robert Marroquin improves to 22-1 with 15 knockouts. Another mismatch there. Santiago is down twice in round one and once in round two. Similar fight to the Hahn fight.
I'll be Hahn. I'll say this. I like this kid. The top rank needs to get him on TV more now. You want to talk about attacks to the body. If you get to see that fight, Abi Hahn was attacking that guy's body and hurting him bad. I mean, this guy, I like him. He's exciting to watch. You know, I love the nickname, the Korean Mexican. You know, he's just exciting to watch. I'm up on this guy big time, and I hope that top rank starts showing him more now. That's why I kind of like what they did, that they showed their undercards on the website, because I was able to see Abi Hahn, you know. I mean, some people don't even know won't be able to know who I'm talking about, because, you know, a lot of promotions don't even show the undercards like that, but definitely a guy to watch out for. The American fight, I was, you know, that was a huge mismatch. That was kind of one of the ones I was kind of hinting towards too earlier. That was just a huge mismatch, mm-hmm. and he dominated. I kind of felt bad for the guy. I was like, man, why is this other guy even in the ring with him? You know, American just ran through him. I think you already said it. Two times in the first, he knocked him down, and then one more time in the second before it was all done. That guy should not even been in the ring. He should not even had gloves on and been in the ring with American at the moment.
Yeah, perhaps in another mismatch, Casey Ramos. He's now 16-0 with 5 knockouts, so just 5 of those 16 wins coming by way of knockout against Arthur Trevino. That was in round number 5, and oh, goodness me, Trevino didn't stand a chance either.
He had no shot either. I'm telling you, there were some of these fights, and, you know, Joel, let me just say, I wasn't in the best of how I was feeling yesterday watching these fights. I was after a long night the night before, so I'm watching the fights, and I'm like, man, I'm getting pissed off, or not even just pissed off, just kind of sad for these fighters. Like, why are they in the ring? They're getting destroyed left and right. I never seen so many knockouts, like, so quick, you know?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. So, moving on from the Sun Bowl in El Paso, well, one of the great college football arenas. I would love to see him go back there. I don't think they will because of all the security stuff, but we've seen Oscar De La Hoya fight there and a couple of people. I think it does make for a very good venue for fights as well. Another good venue, the Prudential Center in Newark, New Jersey, rocking, jam-packed with Polish fans to see Tomasz Adamek take on Fast Eddie Chambers. It was a unanimous decision win for Tomasz Adamek, and a very good fight on top of that, too. Just going to show that although the Klitschkos may be dominating at the top of the heavyweight division, there's a lot of good, fun fights that can be made. Below that, Adamek started the fight with a very good jab, Chambers using his movement, and surprisingly quick for someone with his figure. Chambers informed his corner, though, after the first round that he had a muscle injury in his left arm. And he fought mostly with one arm throughout the fight, had to keep switching between orthodox and southpaw, and really neglected the left hand because of the injury. I wouldn't mind seeing a rematch just because I can't help but wonder what might have been if he had two arms instead of just one. Chambers would land some decent right hands, but for the most part, consistently throughout the bout, I always thought Adamek was better. I had it 116-112 for the poll. How'd you have it scored, and what were your thoughts on the fight?
I also had it 116-112 for Mr. Adamek, but, man, big shout-out to Fast Eddie Chambers, man. I was, for a guy with one arm, he hung in there tough, man, and made it a close fight. Because a few of those rounds were kind of swing rounds where they could have gone either way. You know, I see the controversy where one of the judges had 119-109. That's totally ridiculous. But the 116-112, I had the same, so I'm okay with that. I just can't believe that 119-109. But I like Fast Eddie. He looked good. I would like to see him again. Those two had a great fight. It was very, you know, competitive. And the fact that a guy named Fast Eddie fought in New Jersey sounds like a casino out there, you know. Or a bookie out there being named Fast Eddie.
Yeah, definitely. That was for the vacant IBF North American heavyweight title. Woohoo! Yay for belts that don't matter. Adam Eck is somebody who, in the cruiserweight division, I always really enjoyed watching. I still enjoy watching him fight. I'm not sure it's really a good fit for him, though, but that's definitely where the money is. There's no way he would ever think about going back to cruiserweight, but if he did, I think that there's some really good fights to be made with guys like Marco Hook and people of that nature. There's some entertaining bouts there, too, because I've always enjoyed the cruiserweight division and thought that that's a division that really gets overshadowed by other divisions. And even though the best of the best will either pick light heavyweight or heavyweight, as far as buffer divisions go, it makes for some entertaining fights.
Yeah, you know, I always liked Adam Ag too in the cruiserweight division, but it just seems like the heavyweight division is too complicated for him. They're too big for him for the most part. But he still puts up a hell of a fight usually. He's pretty entertaining. I've noticed he does die down at times. You know, his stamina seems like it's not always there. But I like it. And like you said, you know, there's not just the Klitschkos. Yeah, they're dominating the division. But you got these other fights that also are entertaining to watch at least. And that's always good to have, you know. This was definitely a hell of a good fight to watch.
What do you guys think of the fact that Thomas Adamek seems to have really changed his style up over the last couple of years?
But both thinking about it, I think that Adamek, hey, you know what? Whatever helps you win, all you got to do is win. I don't know if I have a real definitive stance on it. Just like I said, whatever is going to help him win. And I do think it's a change for the better, though, especially as he's moved up to the heavyweight division.
Yeah, I think that he's noticed that he has to do something different because he is a smaller guy. I mean, he looks you can tell he's just a smaller guy compared to all these natural heavyweights. Like you can see it visibly. It's like height, length, you know, muscle mass, everything. You know, so it seems like he it's working for him, but he still might. I think he still needs to make a lot of different, a lot more changes in his game to make everything right. I've noticed that. To me, his endurance doesn't look like it really is there.
Also, what do you guys think about the fact that a lot of fight fans seem to think this is somewhat of a controversial decision, with a lot of people saying that Eddie Chambers actually won the fight in their eyes?
At least in this case, I can see it. I can understand how you would like his style and how you would think that Chambers won the fight. You know, I thought Adamek won. I wouldn't have been devastated by a Chambers decision. I didn't think that it was all that controversial, but people are treating it that way. And let's face it, boxing is a sport that thrives on controversy, whether we like it or not. It's like a bad fungus. It just keeps on growing, and there's nothing we can do to stamp it out. There's never any consistency. I didn't think the judging was very bad at all, save for Alan Rubinstein, who 119-109. The guy's just watching a different fight. I don't even know how you get a scorecard like that, because it was definitely a lot closer. 115-113, even 114-114 I could see. I think to go to Eddie Chambers, though, I'm not sure any more than 115-113 in his favor would be considered a robbery.
Yeah, I think the main thing where it came from is that 119-109. I think people aren't upset that Adamek won so much that score was just horrible. I mean, what did he say his name was, Joel?
Alan Rubinstein.
That guy should never judge a fight again. That's just ridiculous. There's no way it was a shutout fight. I mean, I don't know. That was just ridiculous to say, you know, scoring, but what Joel said, I wouldn't be upset if they gave it to Fast Eddie, but, you know, it could have gone either way. There were swing rounds in there, but it's definitely closer than 119-109. That's where I think that's the biggest gripe about everything.
I just think it's funny that boxing is such a subjective sport. I know we keep using that like it's a cliche, but it's true.
Right.
It's such a subjective thing that literally, the fight just happened last night. It's less than 24 hours, and people are literally so divided. Some people say Adam Meg won the fight. He outboxed Eddie Chambers. Some people say the complete opposite. Eddie Chambers outboxed Adam Meg. One of these guys have to be wrong, but it's such a subjective sport that barely one day after a fight, everybody saw in the world that opinions are this divided. Imagine what it's going to be like a month down the line, 2 months. 10 years later, somebody's going to look back, and they're not going to know what to think. But that's just how it goes in boxing, right?
Right.
It is how it goes.
Yeah, and
go
I
ahead,
think
Josh.
We all kind of got used to it. I use that word used to it. I don't want anyone to think that I'm condoning it. It's just, you know, that's kind of what we came to know our sport that we love so much is it is a subjective sport, like we've all said. And, you know, some people like those busier fighters. Some people like the more precise fighters, you know. It's all in your preference. I think that's where the problem is when it comes to judging, too, is because you have certain judges that have a certain type of preference.
They do have a preference. It's unfortunate that there's no clear-cut consistency. I guess that's not really a good way to describe it, but I wish that it was a little more clear cut in the rules how you're supposed to judge a fight, because they have obviously, you know, effective aggression, and there are guidelines they all follow, ring generalship, but there's different ways to look at those guidelines. And you know, they say styles make fights, and some fights are just bound to have controversial decisions because every single judge is different. It's so subjective, and I hate when people say, oh, you shouldn't leave it in the hands of the judges. Because you know what, guys like Paulie Malignaggi, they shouldn't have to knock people out because they're not big power punchers. This isn't boxing where boxing is the art of hitting without getting hit, whereas it shouldn't all just turn into a barroom brawl where the last man standing wins. That's not the way boxing should be, nor should people be encouraged to necessarily fight that way. But that's what happens with these judges sometimes.
Definitely, definitely.
You guys there? Oh, there you go,
definitely.
Josh. I thought you cut out.
No, definitely. And it's funny that you brought that up where people say don't leave it in the hands of the judges. And they, you know, those same people love to see those brawls, you know, those rock'em, sock'em, one person's going to leave the ring, the other person's going to leave on a stretcher type fights. But yeah, those are the same people that get upset when these fighters make all this money. It's like, man, you want them to beat each other's brains in, you know, for what, chump change? You know, I find it funny. Those
yeah.
people love, you know, and they say how brutal the sport is when something bad happens. And these are still the same people that want to see someone leave on a stretcher, want to see someone get knocked out, you know. It's a lot, and those are those casual fans, and those, and I, you know, and they're great for the sport. We need, you know, the sport needs casual fans. We need diehard fans. We need all kinds of fans, you know. But you gotta, you know, that is the problem. Is that there's too many preferences that people like in a fight. There's some like boxing, some like, you know, rock'em sock'em wars. You know, there's all different kinds. There is a clean cut way. But I think what gets the problem with the judges and stuff is that they took away 10-10 scorecards, you know. Because when you take away the 10-10 now, you're kind of subjective to having to be forced to pick a winner on a round. And that's when sometimes I think some rounds get all messed up.
Definitely, definitely. Moving on now, and also in the heavyweight division, Bryant Jennings, he's quite the interesting prospect. He's now 14-0 with 6 knockouts, picked up a wide unanimous decision over Steve Collins, a fighter who had no business being in the same ring, really, with Bryant Jennings. All the credit to Steve Collins. I don't mean that to totally bash the guy, but Jennings is in one league and Collins is in another. Collins hadn't fought anywhere near the level of opponent that Jennings has had, and you could just see that Collins was totally overmatched. The judges' scorecards all had it 100-89, with the fourth round being the 10-8 round. Thoroughly outclassed was Collins. A good performance for Jennings, although I'm still not torn on quite what I think of him as a heavy prospect in his future in the division.
He's young, he's green, he has to learn a lot. I've read too many people talking about this guy as the next best thing. Freddie Roach last time saying he is the best American heavyweight. I totally disagree. I think he's not ready for a lot of these other heavyweights. He's got a lot of flaws. I mean, I told you this earlier today when we spoke on the phone. And this fight, to me, was Jennings should have been able to finish this guy off. He did not finish him off. At times, it looked like he didn't even want to try to finish him off, that he was just, you know, carrying him along, and I don't like that. When I feel like when you got a guy beaten, take him out. And he didn't take him out, and quite frankly, to me, the last few rounds were boring to me. I literally fell asleep pretty much. I had to watch him again just so I can make sure I didn't miss anything exciting, which I didn't. And I want to see. I think he needs to improve still. He's got a lot to improve. I just don't. I think he's being overhyped by some people. I don't know why they feel he's ready. A lot of people are saying he's ready. I don't see where they get that at. I mean,
absolutely
the guy's
not. He has a lot of potential at 27 years old.
You're right, yeah.
A finalist in the National Golden Gloves, lost to Lenroy Thompson back in his amateur career. He has only 17 amateur fights, though. And now this is just his 14th fight in the pros. He needs a lot of work. He needs to fight some more guys like Collins, and maybe at a little bit higher level, work up, get some experience in the ring, and he definitely has potential. But what I see being a problem is with his style, there's almost times where you can't say he slugs, but he's not really a slick boxer either. And if you've only got 6 knockouts in 14 fights, it's a knockout percentage of just 43%. He's going to run into problems fighting with this style once he gets up to fighting guys that can hurt him, unlike Sergey Lyachovich and Steve Collins. When you get big power punches in the ring with him, he may have a strong chin, and he may not get knocked out. We haven't really seen that tested yet, but I don't see him winning when he faces stronger guys.
Yeah, that's part of my problem, or what I was saying about. He had Collins hurt. Like, he had him hurt, and he had him hurt in the other rounds, too. He did not attack. I mean, in my opinion, you got a guy hurt, and you're building a name. You got to look at it, too, as this. He's trying to build a name for himself, right, in the heavyweight division. He's trying to get a fan following. What do you got to do for that? You got to take these guys out when you have a chance, and by you not doing it, it doesn't make you look impressive at all. To me, this fight was an unimpressive fight, where it could have been very impressive by him finishing him off when he had the chance. That's just my opinion on him. And like you said, when he fights a guy who's big, strong, and that could hurt him, he's going to have a lot of problems.
Uh-huh. He is definitely going to have problems sooner or later down the line. He does make for an exciting and intriguing fighter, though. He's definitely top 50 and probably higher than that, too. I'd like to see him in there multiple times. I think one of the best things we've gotten out of this NBC Sports Network deal isn't just the fact that we're getting more boxing on TV, but I quite like the fact that it's giving main events promotions the opportunity to promote their fighters. I've heard people saying that it's unfair. Yeah, okay, but I think it's good because especially to the casual fan, every time they watch a fight on NBC, they're seeing the same guys. They're building up a fan base, and I think that can only help when people are being intrigued in particular fighters, and they're not just watching boxing freelance. They know when they turn on NBC, oh, good, I get to see Adamek, or I get to see Bryant Jennings. They're building up a significant following because of this television deal.
Yeah, I do like this whole thing that they have. I just wanted to say right now, though, NBC, please give me someone else other than BJ Flores. Please. Just do that for me.
Oh, you
That's
don't
all
like
I
BJ?
I don't like BJ. I don't like BJ Flores. You know, I made a tweet yesterday, and a lot of people took me seriously. And I said that I thought that I never knew BJ Flores boxed. I thought he was just a ring announcer. I seen him in a suit and tie, or a suit with a mic, more than I've seen him with gloves and a mouthpiece. And I know he's boxed before, but that's just my little analogy. People got all crazy about it. But I'm not a big fan of him on the show. I'd rather hear someone else. I don't know who I just want
to hear. BJ gets a little stale. Personally, I think that one of the worst in all sports is Jim Lampley. I want him to go, and I want him to go ASAP, because I think you need to look no further than the complete screw job the HBO commentary team gave to Timothy Bradley in the fight last week. And there's just multiple situations of where he just lets his emotions get the better of him. And I don't know, I've even seen Lampley close to tears for random reasons at some point, just getting totally fired up. He's an emotional guy. He's done so many things. He's covered the Olympics, and I've got respect for him professionally, but I'm just totally soured on him and some of the jobs that he's done with HBO for boxing. But it's a sport that typically has relatively weak announcers, too, and I'm not quite sure why that is. Perhaps just because there's not as much big money in the sport of boxing, and you really need to love the sport in order to do it. It's not as though you're making a lot of money. You know, it's not your favorite sport, but you'll do it for a big network because you're particularly talented. So I suppose for that reason, some of the best guys aren't necessarily covering boxing. But I think that Joe Tessitore from ESPN and Teddy Atlas, I think that they do a very good job, although Teddy Atlas scoring a fight is an entirely different matter. I'm always a little bit curious about his scorecard sometimes. But I think Tessitore does a great job, and I think that everyone on Showtime does a fantastic job as well. Showtime's got to be the odds-on favorite for the best commentary crew in boxing. Wouldn't you agree?
You know, it's funny that you say that, and yeah, people are going to really hate me for saying this. Before, I used to not like Showtime. It was a couple of years ago, I did not like Showtime. And then I actually came along to it, you know, I came around with them, and now I like them. I do like them. I think they're the best out there, you know, but before I didn't, and that's my confession, guys, so all you boxing heads out there, don't shoot me, man. I like them now. That's all that matters. It's about now, not in the past, right?
Yeah, it is all about now. Also on that card, Jamal Davis picked up a unanimous decision victory over Joel Carrasquillo. I wasn't thrilled with Davis.
Who puts a journeyman type match or whatever, you know, a crossroads match right before the main event, you know, like when they could have just sold the main event.
It wasn't bad. I'm all for them making fights like that, and they're good if I'm there. But, oh, I was so annoyed because I didn't watch the fight live last night. I recorded it, and I was going to watch it today. And lo and behold, I pull up my DVR. There's this fight in the middle. Yeah, okay. Watch that. And then, because I only went 30 minutes over based on what it said in the TV guide, I missed the Adamek Chambers fight, and I had to scrounge all around on the internet to be able to watch it instead of watching it in crystal clear high definition. So I wasn't very pleased about that. But hey, well, what are you going to do? A silent card at the Prudential Center. Of course, you're listening to The Boxing Fix. I'm Joel Sebastianelli alongside me, David Chen, and Josh McDaniel, my co-host, as always. David working the switchboard and chiming in from time to time. You can call in at 347-215-7598. It's, of course, greatly encouraged. Once again, the number is 347-215-7598. We'll talk about just about anything you want in the sport of boxing. And, of course, here at Leave It in the Ring, the Boxing Fix isn't the only thing in the Leave It in the Ring stable, is it, Josh?
No, not at all. Don't forget, Monday nights, that would be tomorrow for everyone who's confused on what day it is. We got Noche de Boxeo, for the Spanish speakers out there. That's 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 Eastern. Then Thursday night, we have Leave It in the Ring Radio, which is hosted by Dave Duenas and the Dark Cloud, Gabriel Montoya. Shout out to Gabriel Montoya. I'm going to give him a shout out later. He broke another story. And don't forget Undisputed Fight Magazine. Go ahead. It's your online digital fight magazine. You can get it at UndisputedFightMag.com. The new issue's out. If you get the new issue now, you're going to get next one free. So go ahead and go do that, man, because it's a great magazine, great articles. And don't forget to check LeaveItInTheRingRadio.com. Check out all the shows. Check out all the great pieces that are on there, all the great articles from me to Joel to David to whoever writes to Barbara. All the great stuff on there. So make sure you guys all go check that out.
Definitely. I want to get your subscription to Undisputed Fight Magazine right now. You can do it online in digital form. Let's give Gabriel some props right now. Let's move to our hard-hitting headlines. And one of the headlines, although not unboxing, it is worth mentioning that our own Gabriel Montoya broke a story on a mixed martial arts fighter, Rafael Cavalcante from Strikeforce, tested positive for performance-enhancing drugs. And as always, Gabriel is just all over it when it comes to PEDs.
Yeah, shout-out to Gabe, man. He got a lot of slack again, like he always does, which I think is just ridiculous. But a lot of people were giving a lot of crap to him. And, you know, he he didn't want to say any names and stuff like he shouldn't because he's, you know, he's not trying to drop any sources. And look what happened. Lo and behold, it comes out and it's true. So he's right on another fighter. And big shout out to Gabriel, man, doing work, man. The guy eats, sleeps, and I don't even want to say anything else about it, but he's on the right path for that, man. He's always working hard. Man.
You know what's interesting about Gabe is that he does have honesty and integrity as a journalist. Sometimes it seems like he's trying to be a pain in the ass, but honestly, he's just trying to be an honest, hardworking guy. If you think about it, it's true. Anyone can make the argument that those of us involved in boxing, we want to give boxing a good name. You know what I mean? Like, most of us here love boxing at the end of the day, and we want everyone else to love it too. But the thing is, we have to be honest with ourselves, right? We have to give credit where credit is due, and we have to expose the bad sides of boxing when we see it, because it's out of love that we want our boxing sport to improve, and that's what Gabe does. On the flip side, you guys were talking about Jim Lampley and guys like that earlier. Those guys, I think, are only interested in maintaining the status quo, and it's a status quo that doesn't even exist in reality. Nobody looks at boxing the way these guys are trying to present it at. Nobody is buying what they're selling. Everybody knows there's inherent bad things wrong with it, but in their enthusiasm, I suppose, in trying to maintain this mythical status quo, I think it rubs a lot of people the wrong way, because it just seems like that maybe they're doing it intentionally to cover up, quote-unquote, bad things in the sport in order to benefit from a more positive image than the reality.
Definitely, definitely. Now, moving on, enough talk about MMA and props to Gabriel as well. A lot of injuries have been happening this entire year in boxing, but Brandon Rios pulling out of his fight, very, very disappointing.
Yeah, you know, that news was breaking out while Leaving the Ring was doing their show on Thursday night, and I had just had got off the phone with speaking to them about, you know, Pacquiao Bradley. I got word about the pullout, and I immediately called Mauricio Herrera and gave me a statement. Man, I feel bad for Herrera, man. I'm a fan of watching him fight. He's one of those type of guys who gives it his all, and he can beat the – Ruslan Provokanov when he was, you know, undefeated. He's a guy that can upset fighters. He gave a hell of a fight with Mike Alvarado. This is another chance. You know, his name was starting to build up. Gets another chance with Bam Bam Rios, who we all want to see because we all know we like to watch him fight, and we thought he can make weight. And then all these rumors coming out, you know, left and right field. I mean, who knows if was he injured or not? I'm going to believe that he's injured because that's what he's saying. But Herrera seems like he doesn't know what to believe, and he had some words to say to me about it, about that situation. And, you know, you can find it on leaveitintheringradio.com. But, man, that sucks. I was excited for that fight, especially that was out here in Carson, California, so it was not far from being where I'm at in L.A.
Yeah, definitely. Mauricio Herrera, his fight against Mike Alvarado is one of my favorites of the year. But personally, that was a fantastic fight, one that unfortunately was overshadowed by the unfortunate Rios Abril decision later on in the night. Very, very fun fight, all action. If he had a little bit more endurance, it would be even more interesting as well, just to see where he could take his career. Areola versus Mike Molo was also scratched as well.
Yeah, Areola hurt his left arm. Apparently, I talked to Henry Ramirez, and Areola's left arm has been messed up for the longest time. He's fought through it. He's fought through the pain. He told me if you pay attention in all his fights, he shakes his left arm a lot, you know. But apparently, during this training camp and during sparring, his arm went dead at one point, from what I was told. So they figured that, you know, why even try to fight on? Let it heal properly. Let's get it at 100%. And then move forward. And I think that's probably the best decision. If he's been fighting through this pain, that's probably making it worse. So let's, you know, and he's been fighting consistently too, you know. So it's not like we're probably going to talk about it in a bit, but it's not like he's been taking fights off for years, a layoff, you know. He's a fighter that's been fighting consistently. And for him to be doing that with an injured arm, you already know that bicep is probably just ripping it, is shredding apart, you know, if you're not taking care of it. So hopefully, if he's smart, he's made the right decision. Let it heal. You know, it's not like he was fighting a big name, and he wasn't even the main event. He was the first fight on the card for the telecast, you know, so it's not like we were all jumping that, you know, out of our seats to see him fight, you know what I mean?
Well, true, but it's too bad for Mike, though, because he's had situations like this happen before. This isn't the first time that somebody's had to pull out. He had a Seth Mitchell fight. That fight got canceled. Franklin Lawrence was one that was essentially canceled on him, and now it's Ariola, and that's in a very short time span for Mike Molo. So unfortunate, but stepping up, very solid fill-in fight. Kelly Pavlik versus Will Rosinski. That's one fight I'm very excited about. And I think looking back on last week's show, I was a little bit harsh on Kelly Pavlik. I said maybe it's time for him to retire. He's definitely lost a few steps. I guess that wasn't being too fair to him. But certainly just because he's lost a step, it doesn't mean he should retire. So I'd like to kind of resign that statement. But that should be a war. That could be a really exciting fight.
You know what? I'm excited for that fight as well. And you know, I was harsh on Kelly Pavlik. I didn't say he should retire, but I said he's never going to be at the elite level where he's at. And I'm going to stick behind that because I think we're going to see come on this fight, Will Rosinski. You guys, I'm going to say it right now. Will is going to beat Kelly Pavlik. That's my prediction.
That's not really going out on a limb, though.
I think Will's going to knock him out too.
Okay. Yeah, I suppose so. I don't really know where we rate Kelly Pavlik at this point. On the one hand, I could see him being a top 10 super middleweight. On the other hand, I could see him being ranked outside the top 20. It really depends on how you're going to look at it. Will Rosinski looked pretty strong against Edwin Rodriguez. The judges had it a shutout, but I don't think most people thought it was a shutout at all when they fought on Showbox in last year. He did fight La Bamba, who's another very good up-and-coming prospect. That fight was at Foxwoods, a fight that I unfortunately couldn't cover live on Press Row. I had to watch it on DVR the following day because I had my SATs the following morning. So I was a little bit disappointed about that. Just another situation where it's just poor scoring, even though it didn't really impact the fight and Rodriguez would have won anyway. Rosinski showed me a lot, looked decent against Aaron Pryor Jr., unanimous decision victory there. This is a very intriguing fight at the Home Depot Center in Carson, California. That fight is going to be Saturday, July 7th on the undercard of the Nonito Donaire-Jeffrey Methabula fight live on HBO. Very intriguing card top to bottom with those two fights. Another good job by Top Rank.
Definitely. And you know, since we mentioned Nonito Donaire, I don't know if you got a chance to watch it, but they showed right after the fight game, they showed the 2 days with Nonito Donaire. I thought that was a great episode they showed about him. It was right the 2 days going into the fight with Wilfredo Vasquez Jr. I thought it was a great little documentary they did, and you know, just following Nonito and his everyday stuff and him talking about his family situation. That was a real great job that HBO did with that. And I think anyone who hasn't seen it, they should go check it out. It's pretty interesting to watch.
Indeed, it was very interesting. They do a very, very good job with that show. So with that, we'll move. Well, I'd like to say we're going to move on. I guess we're not really moving on because we're still on generally the same topic. I just got a little bit off track. Why do you think we're seeing so many injuries all of a sudden in boxing?
Man, I think a lot has to do with a lot of these fighters and their inactivity and the weight, personally. Like, let's look at Rios, for instance. I think Rios is a great example. I don't think I think he's having problems because he's not in shape. I think he gets out of shape enormously after his fights. He puts on probably about 30, 40 pounds. You know, that's not healthy, draining all that weight to make weight for a fight. You know, you're losing water. You know, you're losing water. You know, you need water to stay hydrated. You're getting hurt. And I think it makes your muscles weaker. And in his case, you know, he's probably killing himself to try to get back to get to 140, which is the weight class that he's actually going up to fight. I find it funny that they changed the weight to 141 because I don't know what that 1 pound difference makes, but for some reason Rios is camp one at 141. And I also think it's the inactivity. These fighters only fighting once a year, twice a year. I mean, if you go back in the day when fighters used to fight often, you know, you didn't see as many of these injuries like this, and these fluke injuries, these freak injuries, you know, like these little tears and cramps and stuff, you know. I mean, I just think that has a lot to do with inactivity and them being kind of babies. And let me be like an old school person with the same, man. They don't make them like they used to, you know. So I think it's a little bit of that too.
Yeah, I think you're right. You really hit the head on. You really hit the head of the nail there. That's absolutely the case, in my opinion. And I think it goes back to even somebody like a Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. I think the more you're in the ring, it's a different sort of beating that you're taking in training, because sometimes these guys overtrain for the fights and they just put too much into it. I think way back when, even though you were training for fights, training methods changed and they weren't. When I say that they're not as rigorous, I hope people understand what I mean. I'm not saying that they didn't train well back then, but it's a different sort of training. It's a little less it's a little less physically grueling, I suppose. I guess that's a better way to pull it. And as times have changed, with the way we train now, fighters train better, and it makes them physically stronger, but it also has a chance to break them down, too. And that wasn't something that many years ago used to happen a lot. And I also think that now that medicine and all that sort of stuff has improved, I think less fighters are going to fight hurt, and they're realizing, you know what, it's better that I just pull out instead of trying to be a tough guy and fight on a bum ankle or, you know, with my hand really sore. It's better off just to postpone it and be the best that I can possibly be, because these opportunities aren't going to show up all the time.
What about the fact that what about the fact that, I mean, fighter families got to eat, right? I mean, ours is a sport where, unless you're really at the top of the of the food chain, you're really not making the kind of money where you can really take a lot of time off, cancel fights, or perhaps postpone. You might, you know, it might never even materialize again. Your opponent might just go fight someone else, right? So there is that to consider.
Yeah, that's
definitely
why I feel bad.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, and that's why I feel bad for a lot of these fighters, like Herrera or whatever, when a guy like Rios, who I used to be interested in always watching him, but I'm starting to feel like he doesn't take the sport seriously, and it's causing a guy like Herrera, who does take the sport seriously and puts all his effort in it to make weight and be professional about things, he's losing the payday and a chance to shine. And that's where I think it's unfair, especially because I think I'll argue with anyone about this. If they don't feel that Rios puts all his effort in it, man, just look at his last few fights. He's not making weight. That's called being professional. You should know by now if you can make weight or not. You're a professional. You've been fighting over 30 plus fights, you know. And now he's moving up in weight. He needs to be more professional about certain situations. You know, I don't think it's good for him to be coming after his fight. He's going back and gaining about 30, 40 pounds. So that just makes it added pressure for you, because you know you're going to fight again. So why put on that much weight? Why just take maybe around 10 or 20 pounds over whatever you can make healthier and quicker for you to make weight, you know? That's just my opinion on the situation.
Yeah, but I suppose you're right there. Definitely in regards to talking about the weight, although I wouldn't say it's that he doesn't care about the sport. I think he just looks at it like, hey, you know what? If I can get away with coming in overweight, and I have a better chance of winning the fight and just overpowering my opponent, I'm going to do it. And that's not right, but I wouldn't say it's that he doesn't care about the sport either. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I see what you mean. I wouldn't say that. I didn't mean it like he didn't care. I think he's being unprofessional and he's hurting the sport. He might not do it on purpose to hurt the sport, but it does. And I think if he does think that way, and I kind of agree with you, I think he got to that point, especially after the Ed Pilon fight, when he put on a great performance, that he's the man, he's the champ, and he can do whatever the hell he wants as far as when it comes to weight. You know, a little fine doesn't hurt him. Well, you know what? I think if that continues to happen, I think not only do they fine him, they give half his purse to his opponent. That's what I say they start doing.
I like that idea a lot. David, I would be interested to hear your take on that if you want to just chime in for 1 second, because that's a pretty good idea, am I right?
Yeah, definitely. And just to give my opinion on the issue in general, I don't know if I would call a fighter who comes in a little bit overweight as unprofessional or not, but it still begs the question. You're a professional athlete. You're fighting another human being, and it's supposed to be all in the name of fairness and whatnot. But what does it mean when you openly, and it is cool with coming in with the size advantage against another person when they really stuck to the weight limit, you say, well, sure, I'll take a cut out of my paycheck to beat up a smaller guy. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, it's really hard to rationalize that aspect of it.
Right.
Yeah, it is definitely difficult. That's a pretty fair way to put it. Josh, you have something to say about that?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think the one problem is, and people who will defend Rios on this, and I feel bad. I'm not just pointing out all Rios, because there's more than just a lot. There's more than just Rios. I'm using Rios because he's more recent. He has a lot of examples to use. But we see him. He's trying to make weight. We've seen him drain himself and look like a damn goat. But why are you putting yourself through that? You should already know if you can make weight or not. If you feel like you're starting to have trouble, that's when you got to move up, man. I think like in his situation, they're afraid to move him up because they feel that he's not going to be as strong in the higher weight personally.
And there's good fights for him at a higher weight too. There's very good fights at a higher weight for Brandon Rios.
Right.
Especially with his top, because let's be honest, his fans, we're going to want to see just about any fight that Brandon Rios puts on because he's so exciting. If he moves up from the junior welterweight division into welterweight, just to go down the list off the top of my head of a couple names that you could put him in with and fight, how about a fight against Timothy Bradley? I think that would be interesting. Perhaps Andre Berto, Devon Alexander. And if he wants a title, Randall Bailey, Victor Ortiz, there's very good fights out there for Brandon Rios, no matter what division you put him in.
Yeah, I was personally excited to see him for his first fight at 140, though, man. I really want to see him and Herrera. That fight was going to be such a war, you know, and I kind of hope they still try to remake it. I personally, you know, after speaking to Mauricio Herrera, he told me they're not sure what they're trying to do yet. He wants it to be rescheduled, though. I personally don't think they are going to do it. I almost feel like Rios' people kind of like, so why make this one if we can get a bigger name? That's just how I feel like they're going to see it that way. But if they do reschedule, it would be great.
Do you guys know if there's any such things that I'm assuming those two must have signed a contract. Is there such a thing as, you know, is the fight itself protected in any way? So, for example, they must have sat down every time before they make a fight saying, well, if one of us gets injured, this is what we do. If one of us, something happens, this is the plan B, so on and so forth. Do you know if there's any such thing when it comes to this one?
Well, there are provisions. I don't know about this fight specifically, but even though there's provisions, it's not as though they're set in stone. Do you know what I mean, what I'm saying by that? It's like a tentative business plan. You say that this is what's going to happen, but once you're faced with that, then it becomes a whole other issue. So that's another fight I'd like to see. And if Yuriorkis Gamboa ever comes out of hiding, I'd like to see him sack up and fight Brandon Rios as well, because I was not pleased with the way that went down. I respect all fighters in the game, but when after people buy tickets to, you know, when people say, oh, well, I'm going to fly in and watch the fight, when there's posters that have been made, press conferences done, you don't just pull out of a fight and go missing in action because you don't want to fight. If you don't want to fight him, fine, all the power to you. You don't have to, but don't take the fight.
Right, and to answer your question, David, too, on that, just like I said, for that fight, from my understanding, from what Herrera was telling me, is that they didn't have anything about a reschedule. He hopes that they will reschedule it, but he said that they had no idea if they were or not. So if that answers your question, that's from his word. That's from what Herrera told me. But other than that, I don't know. I'm sure they do have certain ones. Like I know Humberto and Ortiz injury, that for the first time, Humberto got hurt, they had it rescheduled. Yeah. So I'm sure something like that, when it's a big, maybe a big name fight like that, they have it in their contract.
Josh, I know you're the one that talks to Mauricio Herrera at least on somewhat of a regular basis. Do you know if he's basically sort of looking to move on to fight? Because I can only assume that Brandon Rios, being the champion, being the one who's much more popular on the world stage, he's got the financial ability that he can afford to wait around and weigh his options, whereas Mauricio Herrera might just want to move on with his career, possibly?
Yeah, Herrera, I mean, Herrera did say that he wants to still fight. He's still training, because he said, according to him, he was in the greatest shape so far, and he was well-prepared. He was having a great training camp, and they fixed the little mistakes that they had against Alvarado. And he wants to continue. He said he would fight Alvarado if Alvarado gave him a rematch again, because, or whoever it may be, he just wants to keep going, you know. But he did say he wanted the Rios fight really bad, though, like, even if they decided to reschedule it later. But he's still training and staying busy for anything that may happen. He was hoping to stay on the card, too, but apparently, you know, he was a realist about it with me. He even said that, you know, I know my name is not big enough to care to even just throw in a fill-in fighter for Rios to carry on the card. I understand that. He's like, I totally understand that that's how it is, but that's why I was looking forward for the Rios fight, is that he was looking forward to getting his name out there even more, and exposure, and shining his name, you know, getting that shine.
Uh-huh, totally. I understand that that's a fight that I would like to see. But moving on, we'll head over to the United Kingdom before we have Ryan Bivens on in just about 10 minutes of Sweet Boxing. He's going to come on and talk some boxing with us. And remember, you can do that as well. You can call in at 347-215-7598. The lines are always open. We would love to hear from you about anything in the sport of boxing. Don't be bashful. Come on in and talk boxing right here with us on The Boxing Fix on Leave It in the Ring Radio and Block Talk Radio, where boxing addicts come to get their fix of fights. In the UK at the Velodrome in Manchester, Lancashire in the United Kingdom, Scott Quigg and Randall Monroe, very disappointing technical draw after that fight ended in the third round, just 43 seconds in, because Monroe was caught so badly above the right eye from an accidental head clash that required 9 stitches. Nasty, nasty cut.
Yeah, it was grotesque. Oh, just thinking of it, I get the chills, man. That was nasty. And I feel bad that it ended that way. It sucks. And people on Twitter were so mad. It was just crazy, the outrage about it. And, I mean, I shouldn't even use the word outrage, because it makes it seem like people were just, like, pissed off at the fighters for headbutting. But it was more like, damn, everyone was so excited about this fight. You know, all the hype, all the, you know, everything, the excitement. The next thing you know, it ends like that. And it really sucks bad. But that was just disgusting, I'll tell you. I had to turn away from my laptop once, because I was streaming the fight, and I mean, that was just gross.
Oh, it was. It was just absolutely brutal. So, disappointing end to what could have been a very good fight on Sky. In the light middleweight division, Ryan Rhodes and Sergey Rybchenko squared off for the vacant EBU light middleweight title. The fight ended in the 7th round, a technical knockout. Sergey Rybchenko was winning what was not so much a close fight. He was in control of the fight, but it was by no means a blowout over the veteran Ryan Rhodes. But Rhodes drops to 46-6, and Rybchenko improves to 21-0 with 16 knockouts. After a huge left-hook body shot in that 7th round sent Rhodes down, and shortly after, Rybchenko just finished him off.
Yeah, I think, in my opinion, this needs to be the end. We call it quits now, almost time for Rhodes. I don't know what your opinion on it is. He is getting up there. He's up there in age, you know. His career has been, you know, pretty good. A lot of fights on his, you know, his resume. I think it's about that time. He didn't look impressive to me. He looked kind of a little slow. He got tagged in the body shots and everything. In my opinion, I think it's about that time to hang those gloves up. How about yours, Joel?
Agreed. It wasn't a particularly flashy performance. He's definitely lost a few steps. He's been fighting almost as long as I've been alive. He's been in the ring 17 years,
right.
Made his debut back in February of 1995 against Lee Crocker. He's come a long way. He's had some good fights. But I think it all started going downhill really right about 2010. He was still winning fights, but you could see him definitely losing it when he was about 33. Lost to Canelo Alvarez, TKO in the 12th round. He was down once in round number four. A record of 46-6, very formidable career, mostly over in the United Kingdom, save for very few fights elsewhere. I think his fight against Canelo in Mexico may have been the only exception, the only time he's ever fought outside the UK. Very good domestic fighter, but it's right about that time to hang it up. I'm not really sure what he proves this point. If you want to talk just British fighters in the division, I would say that Prince Aaron, Brian Rose, maybe even Matthew Hall and Bradley Price are all rated higher than Ryan Rhodes, perhaps even Sam Webb, too.
Definitely, definitely. I'm sorry, I was just looking at a tweet right now about one of our callers. Definitely. I do think there's a lot of people up there that are ahead of him. Right, and I remember you bringing up right now, too, about Canelo and, you know, the way he dismantled him pretty much, and especially ending it. You know, I just think, you know, man, you said it. He's almost fought as long as you've been alive. So I think that's
exactly.
About time.
17 years professional experience.
Yeah, I think
it's
that's
just
about
that
time
for Ryan Rhodes.
Yeah.
Yep. Also on that card, Richard Towers. Yeah, Richard Towers picked up a TKO in round number 9 against Gregory Cotone. That fight was scheduled for 12 rounds, ended 48 seconds into the ninth in the heavyweight division. Towers is undefeated, 14-0, 11 knockouts. What did you think of him?
I liked it. I caught the fight just in time. I watched it. I liked him. I was impressed. Let's see more of him.
In the books, it goes down as a TKO, and Towers had won most of the rounds in that fight. But it was essentially a retirement. Tony said he had a damaged arm, hurt his arms. That seems to be a theme in the heavyweight division. Areola hurt his arm this past week. Chambers hurt his arm. And here's just another time. Gregory Tony hurts his arm in the heavyweight division in a fight, causing the fight to be stopped in round number 9. Also on the card, the middleweight division, Martin Murray, now 24-0-1 with 10 KOs. He picked up a points decision, 98-93, over Kareem Achor. 29 years old, he's a solid fighter. I liked him. I saw against Felix Sturm that split draw at the tail end of last year.
Oh, yeah, that was the fight that I was hoping they would ever do again, too. But I like him, you know. I wish we can. That's one thing. Let me just say this, too, is that these British fights could be more on regular TV that I didn't have to just stream them all the time. Because that was he's a fighter that I like to watch. He was very exciting. Not just exciting, but he's a talented fighter. I almost said young fighter, but I guess it's pretty young. Still 29. He's just probably reaching his prime. But he's someone that I want to see more. You know, I wish they were on regular TV for us.
Okay, now here's something that jumped out at me, and I just had to bring this up. There was a fight on the card, all right? It was in the lightweight division, Scott Jenkins, undefeated, 6-0 now. He fought a man named Christian Leight. His professional record is as follows. 6 wins, 124 losses,
wow,
and 6 draws. Now, here's what's even more incredible about it, all right? He's never won by knockout, not once, not one of his 6 victories. In his 124 losses, he's only been knocked out 4 times. 120 times he has gone the distance and gotten absolutely slaughtered on the scorecards. But it's just so tough to put this guy away. He's been fighting ever since 2003. So he's been fighting for almost 10 years, and the guy only has 6 wins in 136 fights. You don't see records like that too often. I'm not even sure what to say about that. I've never seen the guy fight, but I was just looking at BoxRec and going through the records and looking at the fights, and I said, whoa, 6, 124 and 6. Could you imagine Michael Buffer announcing that before a fight?
That is just, I can't believe what I just heard right now about that. That's just, you know what, I'll give him this, though. That kid has got a heart. He definitely
has
the heart to go out there, you know, and keep doing it for 100 and some odd times. That is ridiculous. I can't believe he's even allowed to get his boxing license, you know, a license to be fighting.
Although I suppose if he's losing by points, it's not as though he's losing them all by knockout either. Although he's not competitive, I don't see the point.
Yeah.
Hastings Razani is another fighter. He fought the undefeated Lucas Brown. Brown picked up a TKO victory just 44 seconds in after a right hook to the head. He is now 13-0 with 12 knockouts. But Razani's record is 23-68-5. He's another one. You don't see a whole lot of those records in the United States.
What did you say? How many wins did he have, those 23?
He has 23 wins, 68 losses, and 5 draws.
Hey, he has what's that, about 18, my math might be wrong, but 18 more wins than the other guy, so I'm okay with it.
Your math was wrong. I think it's 17.
You know, but I'll say this. Why don't they? Now, would you be interested in seeing those two guys fight each other if they're in the same weight class and everything?
Say that one more time. I'm sorry, you just cut out.
Would you be interested in seeing the guy who was 6-100, you know, 6 wins, 100 losses, or whatever it was, versus the 16-win guy or the 23-win guy, have them duel off in a 101? I think that would be great. Let's see that.
Nope. I got no desire to see that, but okay. So those bouts were over in the UK. Moving on from there, we'll go to Italy. Just real quick, we'll touch upon it, the middleweight division. Domenico Spada improves to 35-4 with 18 knockouts after a unanimous decision victory over Maurus Androwski. That was for the WBC silver middleweight title. Once again, hooray for WBC things that don't matter. But good for Spada. He did look relatively decent once again. If you've seen one Spada fight in the past couple years, you've seen them all. He did lose a unanimous decision fight against Darren Barker over in the UK. Barker, of course, was knocked out by Sergio Martinez. That's why you might recognize that name. That was in April 2011 for the vacant EBU middleweight title, a fight I thought should have had a little bit more attention because that was a good international contest. He's good but not great. Perhaps a top 20 middleweight. Just figured we should touch on that. Moving on from there as well, before we get to Ryan Bivens, from Playa Mamitas and Playa del Carmen in Quintana Roo, Mexico, in the bantamweight division on Mexico Televisa Television and on Fox Español in the United States, Carlos Cuadras improves to 25-0 with 21 knockouts after a fifth-round KO of Javier Franco for the vacant WBC United States bantamweight title. Once again, it's another WBC belt that just floats around in its existence that I didn't even know was being awarded. But then Cuadras, and also on the middleweight division, Gilberto Ramirez Sanchez, he improved to 22-0 with 19 knockouts after a TKO in round number 8, picking up the victory and the WBC Youth World middleweight title against Isaac Mendez. Both of them for being undefeated prospects. It's not people a lot of people have heard much about, but I was impressed with those fighters.
Yeah, definitely. I was pretty impressed. I love that you bring up this whole the WBC belt that don't matter. That's a great way to describe them.
I don't want to say it's pointless because see, to those guys it does mean something. I'm just not really sure why we've got all these belts. It doesn't seem necessary at all to me, but it is what it is. Our last fight that we're going to be talking about, I thought that this was worth a mention. It was at the Hyatt Regency Hotel in Minneapolis, Minnesota, promoted by Bob Stein of RDS Boxing, who does a lot of fights up in that Michigan, Minnesota area. In the lightweight division, Jason Litzau is now 29-3 with 22 knockouts. He knocked journeyman Ira Terry down twice en route to the victory in the very first round, 2 minutes and 44 seconds in. Jason Litzau is the perfect example of, if you ever want to explain to people how the television levels work, just do it with Jason Litzau. You win some good fights off TV, you get a chance on ESPN Friday Night Fights. If you excel on ESPN FNF, you get bumped up to Boxing After Dark. But if you lose every single time you fight on HBO Boxing After Dark, you just get sent right back down to ESPN. And then below that, he's the perfect example of the different tiers of boxing. Good for him picking up a victory, although at this point, I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure what to think of him, because against Adrian Broner, he was TKO'd in the very first round. But he also had some good performances against Rocky Juarez and Celestino Caballero, which weren't all that long ago, within 2 years ago. So I don't think he's top 10 anymore. BoxRec says he's ranked 9th. But the verdict is out on Jason Litzau, how he'll finish, because he is going to get, at just age 28, he is going to have more opportunities in the spotlight. Of course, I don't see him doing great things, but do you think he's still a formidable challenger?
No, and let me just say it like this, and all respect to Litzau, I have a lot of respect for the kid, you know, because he's upset Caballero, who no one thought he could be. But do you think he could be, let's say he got a rematch with Broner, you think he could be a Broner?
No.
Okay, do you think he could beat any of the maybe top three guys in that weight class?
Well, assuming the top three we're talking about, I would say Adrian Broner, Diego Magdaleno, and perhaps Juan Carlos Burgos or Takashi Uchiyama. I don't really see him beating any of those guys, although Juan Carlos Burgos perhaps. Perhaps it makes it at least for an interesting fight, but like I said, I don't really know how to gauge Litzau after getting totally annihilated by Adrian Broner.
Yeah, so that's kind of what I mean. I think he's going to be, like I said, all due respect to Litzau, I don't mean to be sound like an a-hole coming off like this. I think Litzau is better off being a ESPN Friday Night Fighter, right, you know, for now. He's had his chances. He's failed at those chances. I think he's just a guy who's going to be around, you know, to test other fighters now, you know, give them a test. He might beat those guys. And I think that's what's going to be perfect. He's a perfect measuring stick for guys who are trying to get to where he used to be at.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, totally. At this time, though, we are going to bring Ryan Bivens onto the program. I'm Sweet Boxing, our only guest tonight. Because it's Father's Day, we didn't have much success getting people onto the show. Obviously, a lot of people out doing things with their fathers, as they should be, and not everyone able to make it back in time to do the radio show. I can tell you, though, we did confirm John Scully to be on the program next week, so he is going to be on. Ryan, welcome into the show.
Hey, how you doing?
What's going on, Ryan, man? How are you doing today?
I'm good. Yeah, I've been listening to the show. Some notes I have. I guess y'all were talking earlier about how many titles the WBC has. Well, I decided to go and count them. There's a little bit. It's around 20. And, you know, excluding female titles.
You finished counting in the time that the show is done. You actually finished counting. You had enough time to do that. There's got to be a lot of them, but go ahead. How many exactly?
Yeah, there's around 20.
That wow. Just seems highly unnecessary. Highly unnecessary.
Yeah, you know, they have, like, a lot of regional titles, you know, and some of them have, like, funky names, like Mediterranean, you know. I guess most of them are Spanish.
The recreational municipal Mediterranean international belt, like something
right.
like that.
Right. Yeah. A lot of them are Latino type belts.
Right. Right. Now going on. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, and also, y'all were talking about the score on Chavez Lee earlier. Well, I looked at the official judges' scorecards, and there was only one round that they all gave to Chavez, and that was round 4. And the rest pretty much were, you know, up for grabs. And I kind of agree with that. I mean, I had the score 4-2 for Lee going into the last round. I gave Chavez, obviously, the 4th, and the other one I gave him, I think, was the 6th. And I only thought he took the 6th at the end when Lee got hurt at the end of the round. Prior to that, I thought that was Lee's round.
I would say that's a fair assessment. As you heard, I had every single round for Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., save for the very first round in that fight, although the very third round was a toss-up round that you very easily could have given to him as well. Yeah, just I guess I was disappointed by the judge's performance, though. But well, what did you think of the other fights this weekend? Particularly, I saw on Twitter that you were very high on Holly Holm.
Well, Holly Holm, it's more about, you know, her career as a whole. You know, she's done a lot, you know, over the years. She has more titles than I would like to count. And, you know, coming off a devastating loss like that, you know, this late in her career, you know, it's tough to rebound, and especially against somebody that was just that much physically, you know, bigger than her. So, I mean, she had a good game plan. She got on her bicycle, and she, you know, pretty much disengaged her the whole fight. You know, put together, you know, short combinations, and she held, like, kind of like Bernard Hopkins in a way, you know, to make sure that she wouldn't get beat up.
Yeah, the preacher's daughter, the nickname she goes by, she defeated Ann Sophie Mathis by unanimous decision. That fight was in Albuquerque, New Mexico on Friday night. She improves to 31-2-3 with 9 knockouts. A lot of times the female fighters get overshadowed, but good to give her a little bit of a shout-out. What's your take on Jason Litzau?
Litzau, he is between a journeyman and a contender. I mean, it's like if he's fighting a guy that's having an off night, then, you know, he can beat them. But other than that, you know, I can't see him in serious contention for taking a title. But yeah, he can beat guys on a good day.
Definitely, definitely. Well, what about some of the other fights? What fights would you recommend that people go out and see that happened over the course of this past week?
From Friday, there was an Italian card. It was a 6-rounder on the undercard. I think the name's Paulo Lazzari and Alfredo Di Feito. It ended up in a draw. It seemed like a draw to me. It was action-packed. But, you know, it's only 6 rounds. A lot of good fights are 6 rounds this year that I've seen. And, matter of fact, the very next day, on the Telefutura undercard, there was Victor Sanchez against Jerry Guevara.
Yes.
Sanchez won a unanimous decision. But that was just a great fight.
It was very, very exciting fights. Any last thoughts before we let you go, both Ryan and Josh, if you want to ask him anything?
Well, no, I was just going to do a little plug for him before he does it himself, too. You know, make sure everyone, you know, he's telling you all these fights. They should be up. I think he's posted them up on your website, right? Right, Ryan?
Yeah, yeah. They're on sweetboxingvideos.wordpress.com.
And if you guys haven't checked it, it's a great site. It's a great site that he puts up all the videos. And I think everyone who listens needs to go check that out because he's doing that for you guys, man. He's doing it for you boxing addicts out there. So make sure you go check that out. Support him and follow him on Twitter, at SweetBoxing. So, yeah, man, Ryan, any last words, you know, your parting thoughts?
Oh, yeah, one more thing. Y'all were talking about that Richard Towers fight earlier. Well, I watched it from the beginning, and it was especially the 5th round in particular, was one of the most disgraceful things I've ever seen from a referee. And the referee's name is, I think, Ernst Salzgeber.
I'm blanking on his name. It's and it'll come to me because you're right. I didn't really go too far into that. I think he's only had, I heard the Sky guy say, like 2 fights in quite a long time. Yeah,
right. That was
Salzberger.
Me that said that. That was me that said that. He's had two. He's just 2 fights this year.
I knew I saw that someplace.
Right. I mean, most referees, you know, they judge, like, you know, well over 20, it going through halfway through the year. But, you know, this guy, he had a really bad night, or he was being paid off because, you know, Towers was ready to go. I mean, I'm not sure Towers even, you know, wanted the referee to let this happen because his health was in serious danger. He was falling all over the place. I mean, the ref just gave him every opportunity to not get knocked out. You know, it was,
uh-huh.
it was just sad to see. So,
it was,
I mean,
poor.
He escapes with his undefeated record, but, you know, at what cost? I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Tony was
literally
beating the living hell out of the guy. And he couldn't support himself. He's falling all over the ropes. I mean, this lasted for, like, well over a minute, too. And, you know, it wasn't just, like, you know, a missed knockdown. You know, this was, like, a solid, you know, over a minute beating where a guy is mostly helpless. And the referee, just because, you know, he managed just to stay on his feet, the referee just let it go.
Yeah, that wasn't very good at all. Ryan, as always, thanks a lot for coming on the show tonight.
Yeah, no problem. Good show. Talk to you next week.
Hey, thank you. Of course, you're listening to The Boxing Fix here on Leave It in the Ring Radio and Blog Talk Radio. I'm Joel Sebastianelli, alongside me, Josh McDaniel. As we celebrate Father's Day this week, and I thought it was worth revisiting some fathers and sons in boxing, because there are a whole lot. Throughout the years, boxing has always been a family affair between fathers and sons. Nights at the fights have always served as sort of bonding experiences, and it's always this is one of those sports that fathers and sons typically enjoy together. Now, a lot of retired fighters are very reluctant to see their children follow in their footsteps, but talent tends to run through the family veins, and oftentimes the father winds up as the mentor to the child as a trainer. There's a lot of situations that go both ways. There's a lot of good combinations, and there's a lot of bad combinations as well. I don't know, what ones would you say are some of the best? I would definitely say that Joe Calzaghe and his father is one of the best we've seen. The Cooney family has all sorts of stuff like that. Eric Morales as well, and his father, Jose Morales, that's been very well documented. What's your take on that? And do you think it's ultimately a good thing for young fighters to be trained by their father?
Well, I have like a mixed feeling on it. I think a lot of it all depends. We've seen some great fathers and son combos to some bad father and son combos, you know, that screw up, you know. I mean, we've seen Mosley and his father do great for the longest time and then kind of have a falling out. Same with, we have Trinidad and his father. That was another combo that worked well for a while. You know, I just think, it all depends. Look at another one, and we got to speak to him on our very first show, Corrales and his father. You know, Ray Woods was his trainer for a long time, and then Diego decided to leave. I almost feel that even though it might be a good combination for a while, it doesn't necessarily always going to work out, where I think you shouldn't mix family with business. Look at a perfect example, and we just talked about Leave It in the Ring just did an interview with their trainer, with the guy's trainer, Ray Serrano. We saw him on Friday Night Fights against Kareem Mayfield.
Mm-hmm.
His trainer wanted to stop the fight, which he should be in charge of. But his father, who was not his trainer, but worked in the corner, would not let the trainer stop the fight. And we all know Ray Serrano did not need to go back out there. He was really hurt bad. And we saw what happens. He went back out there and the ref stopped it because he got knocked out or TKO'd. But see, certain situations like that, that's where I think there's a problem. The family gets too much involved into it, and they don't always look in the best interest. I think sometimes they look as far as, you know, could be from A, making money, or B, let's get our son to be a star, you know, and they're not looking from the point where, damn, our son's hurt. I mean, honestly, if I had, I'm not a father, not that I know of, I'm just kidding everyone, I'm not a father, but, you know, if I had my kid fighting and he's really hurt, I wouldn't want him to go back out there. I'll call the fight off, you know, but not all fathers allow
that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, one of the examples like that is Smokin' Joe Frazier. He became almost a controversial nemesis to his son's health in the 1980s. Marvis Frazier was his son's name. Very gifted boxer. Won the National Golden Gloves heavyweight title in 1979. The National AAU heavyweight championship in 1980. But he also had a bit of limited talent, too, at least in the professional ranks. And he entered bouts against Larry Holmes and Mike Tyson. And in both contests, the inexperienced and overmatched Frazier was obliterated, annihilated in the opening round, lasting nearly the full 3 minutes against Holmes in 83, but only 30 seconds against Tyson. And in the years that followed those dangerous debacles, the short-lived career of Marvis Frazier, Joe defended himself, saying that he only sought the best paydays for his son, knowing that his time in boxing would inevitably be limited. But others say, and I would chime in here too, that Frazier was just trying to recapture the heavyweight crown vicariously through his son, once again putting him in danger in the process and thrusting him headlong into the fire and just changing that style from that of a boxer to a brawler. Either way, in the Frazier family relationship, you can see right there just the epitome of the perils of father and son ties in the ring.
Definitely, definitely. And I totally agree with you. He was trying to get that title to kind of live vicariously through him. And I think that's the problem. I think a lot of the, especially a lot of the fathers, they do tend to live vicariously through their sons. You know, I can't give you the exact, I almost don't want to even bring it up because I don't know the exact interview. But, you know, I remember when I saw something by Sugar Shane Mosley and his dad, you know, when they won the title or whatever. And, you know, Sugar Shane's dad was always boasting and bragging, yeah, I have the title, we got the title, you know, this and that, like as if he was the champion himself, you know what I mean? And I think he was a guy who was very vicarious to do his son. You know, he got Trainer of the Year, if I'm not mistaken, and he was boasting and bragging like he's the real champion almost, who, in my eyes, that's how it seemed. So you can tell a lot of them do live vicariously through their kids, and that's where it begins to be a problem. That's where egos get to be a problem, and not just egos, the minds of the father not knowing when it's time to stop a fight or when you know your son's losing, you know, when to call it quits.
Yeah, Rex Walker, who has been associated throughout the years with the World Boxing Council in various capacities, he actively participated in discussions back in 2009 to actually ban fathers from corners because there is a hazard with having them in there. But on the other hand, training with fathers and sons, they know each other best and they can furnish relatively fertile results. I actually did some extensive research on this because, I had an internship with Jimmy Birchfield's Classic Entertainment and Sports a while back, and they promoted the potential Elvin Ayala versus Hector Camacho Jr. ESPN fight. So I had a chance to talk to Hector Jr. and Hector Sr. and really see firsthand just how training with a father and son is and how it affects each fighter. Hey, you know what? You can't pick your family, but you can pick your trainer. And you just got to choose wisely. There's, for as many good father-son trainer combinations as there are in boxing, there's a lot of bad ones, too.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the perfect way to describe it. For all the bad ones, or for every great one, you got a real bad one, you know. So it's a hit or miss, you know. And I kind of like the whole idea of maybe not. How about, you know, here's an example, or here's a good way of maybe going about it. A father and son can be trainer, you know, you can have a father train you, but he can't be the number one in your corner to make the decision.
Yeah, fair enough.
That would probably fix things.
It's really weird, too, because you would think that more fathers would actually throw in the towel early to stop the fight than letting their sons just get the crap kicked out of them. But that's not always the case. But, of course, a very happy Father's Day to everybody listening to us here on The Boxing Fix. With that, we're going to move down to our rants and raves. Of course, we always like to end the show on a good note with the raves. But first, the rants. And I'll start off with this. Can we please all stop talking about Pacquiao Bradley? Please. For the love of God, I am through with it. I don't want to hear any more about it. And it's becoming quite frustrating. What's frustrating me the most is, for one thing, I thought the HBO commentary crew was awful, and they've misled a lot of people. And I think we're really seeing people's rooting interests. We're seeing a whole lot of things at play here. But what's bothering me the most is that it feels like you need to think it was one of the worst decisions in boxing history, or else you're not a boxing fan, and people rip into you and criticize you and You know, if you thought that Pacquiao won 120 to 108, then you're just held to, you know, the holy standard of the ultimate boxing fan. And if you thought the fight was even close, you're just ridiculed by people on social media and everywhere else. Watch the fight without volume. That's all I got to say. Watch it without volume. And when you don't have Jim Lampley yapping in your ear and promoting the economic bell cow of HBO World Championship Boxing and who sells all their pay-per-views, if you put it all aside, you just watch the fight like that, or you turn off the volume on the British feed and you don't listen to Amir Khan touting his buddy on Sky, I'm not saying that Manny Pacquiao deserved to win the I'm not saying that Timothy Bradley deserved to win the fight, because he certainly didn't. But this was by no means this incredible blowout. It wasn't even the worst decision of the month.
I mean, let me just add real quick. To be fair, I mean, it is a good thing that for once the fighter is popular enough where this kind of quote-unquote injustice happens and we all agree with a bad decision. It gets some exposure. It is good to talk about stuff like this. And to expose some of the judging issues we have in the sport. But by the same token, you have to be fair to the other guy too. In this case, it's Timothy Bradley. You have to be fair in saying that although we feel that Manny Pacquiao probably should have won the decision, that Timothy Bradley put up a good fight, that it was a very competitive fight, it does the sport no credit for you to just turn around and go ahead and inflict injustice on Timothy Bradley by saying that Manny Pacquiao dominated him, even though that's not true neither. I mean, this got to go both ways, right? We got to be fair to both parties.
Exactly. And also, man, all those people, I don't know if you guys heard, but, you know, Bradley was getting death threats because of this. That's just ridiculous and cowardly. That's all I even say about that. That's just plain ridiculous and cowardly to even do that. It's not his fault that he won. I mean, well, it is his fault he won. He did what he got to do. But it's not his fault that you don't agree with the decision.
Exactly. Give credit where credit's due. Now, for both of you guys, did you hear the interview on the fight game with Jim Lampley immediately following the Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. versus Andy Lee fight? They had Dwayne Ford on the program to defend his scorecard. Well, what was your take on that? Did you think that it was a good performance in the interview, for lack of a better phrase?
I feel he digged himself a deeper hole than the criticism that's already there. I felt he left a lot of things unanswered. He was he would say one thing, and according to his scorecard, had the total opposite, or and vice versa. You know, I don't know. I don't like what he said. I think it was a bad move for him, period, that you need to be speaking out publicly about it right now.
Actually, I disagree. I think it's good for him and all those just to speak out. I didn't think it was a great performance in the interview, but I didn't think it was as bad as you said. I thought he made some fair points. What about you, David?
I think it cuts both ways. I mean, judges can do one of two things, obviously. The best, safest thing they can do, which is, hey, man, this is my decision. Live with it. This is just how the sport works. When you have a decision that everybody clearly disagrees with, and for once, it's not exactly a difficult argument to make. You can look at CompuBox numbers, even though that's not the best criteria for judging a fight. But still, you know, this is the one time where most of the boxing world is in unison on this one. But for him to come on and sort of give his reasoning, it's sort of like you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't kind of thing. And
right,
it could just be that he's not very good at explaining himself. Not everybody is good at articulating their argument when it comes to something like this.
Most judges aren't. Remember Chuck Ciampa at Showtime? That was hardly the most articulate exercise of the English language out there. Those guys aren't made for being on camera and doing stuff like that. So I'm not looking at it as I was expecting this rah-rah amazing speech from him. I thought he did a fair enough job explaining it. And even though I disagree a little bit with his scorecard, kudos to him for actually coming on the show to defend it. Because clearly Lampley had an agenda to begin with anyway. So it is what it is. I just want to stop talking about it, and because I want to stop talking about it, I'm done with it now. We're going to drop it, move on, and hopefully we don't have to ever talk about it on this show again. What about you, Josh? You had a rant about Top Rank on September 15th. There's a reason you don't like the Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. versus Sergio Martinez fight.
Well, let's clear this up and make sure people don't want my head to be taken out for thinking I don't want the fight to happen. I want the fight to happen. I'm excited about it. I just don't want this fight to happen on September 15th if Canelo and Ortiz goes down. Same with, or I want one of them to just choose different dates. Let's do it that way. You know, they saying they're going to do September 15th. I mean, isn't that just ridiculous? Like, if they're, especially they're both going to be on pay-per-view, I just think that's just ridiculous. I think that one of them will pull out, though. I think it would be a bad move, a bad business move. It's just, you can't make us have to choose which one I'm going to watch. Like, I'm definitely not going to buy two pay-per-views, you know?
So which one would you watch?
I would definitely watch the Martinez one, Martinez and Chavez. I'd definitely watch that one. I think Martinez and Chavez makes for a much better fight. I think it's a much more important fight. I think we already see the angle that Canelo and Ortiz is heading to. You know, I already see that it's supposed to be Canelo's test, and then he fights Mayweather in May probably or whatnot. But I just don't like it. It's just bad. I think it's bad for boxing to make fans have to choose between who I'm going to watch, you know, and then the money issue, and even just to attend the fight, you know. It's, you know, what if the, how about for the media aspect, like who are you going to choose to go see a fight? Isn't that just bad for business, you know? And this whole war needs to stop. It's just baloney. It's bull. You know, it's bullshit. You know, I'll just go ahead and say it, you know. We need to just give it, stop being a bunch of little bitching and moaning, complaining, oh, I don't want to work with this promoter and that. No, just make it happen. That's what the best fights are. And stop doing dueling pay-per-view, or don't do dueling pay-per-views. It's ridiculous and senseless and pointless.
It really is. I totally agree with you. But to end the show on a good note before we take off for the night, Raves, we've already talked more than enough about how Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. looked good. I want to talk about stadium fights, though. I love these things. I thought the whole Cowboy Stadium deal was just the coolest thing, with them fighting in a big stadium like that. For some reason, I'm just drawn to this sort of stuff. And the Sun Bowl, given that I'm such a crazy college football geek, in addition to being addicted to boxing, too, the Sun Bowl is a very prestigious stadium. They've had the Sun Bowl bowl game there for many, many years. It's been played, it's the second oldest bowl game in the country behind only the Rose Bowl. It's been played annually ever since, for the most part, with very few exceptions, ever since 1935. I mean, it's been around for a very long time, and at the actual Sun Bowl stadium that the fight was in, it's been played every single time since 1963, without exception. So 50 years in Sun Bowl Stadium, host of Texas El Paso Miners. There's a lot of history in that stadium. They've had a couple great soccer matches there. They've had some great fights there with Oscar De La Hoya using that as his stomping grounds in the ring as well. So I think what it really does, it gives people an opportunity that live in these areas to go and see a fight. More people can see the fight. More people can see it at a reasonable cost. And not only that, but when they go to stadiums like this, let's face it, there isn't a whole lot around El Paso, Texas, where you could go see a fight. Now, I know it's close to the Mexican border, but it's also, it's much closer to New Mexico and Arizona than it is to any other part of Texas. So Houston, it's well away from those big cities. It's all about bringing the fights to more people, and that's exactly what the stadium fights do. I love it, and I wish we'd see more of it.
Well, shout out to the Sun Bowl and you bringing up about the bowl game. My cousin, he actually played in that bowl game a few years ago and they won it. So shout out to the Sun Bowl. But here's my thing. I agree with you for these outdoor stadiums and everything, or the arenas, but this is where I have a problem with it being in Texas. I don't trust the judges in Texas. I never will. And so I'm not all for it being at the Sun Bowl. We luckily didn't have to see a fight go to the scorecards, because, quite frankly, I felt like we would have saw something just horrible, just like we're used to seeing in Texas. But
I think so, too, based on them having Andy Lee up 4-2, which isn't really the way you think they'd rob a fighter, though. But I'm happy, and with the way the fight was going anyway, if it had continued at that pace, Chavez would have done more than enough to pick up the decision with the way he was performing in those middle rounds.
Yeah, I agree. But I'll tell you this. I know you said that we talked a lot about Chavez already earlier, and this that was part of my rave, and this is why. I've been one of the hardest people on Chavez, on Twitter, on everything. I talk a lot of crap. I've never been impressed by him. The guy impressed me. Big ups to Chavez. Do your thing. And even bigger props to Chavez for after the fight saying, let's make this Martinez fight happen. I will shut his mouth. Obviously, I don't agree with him, but big ups for him to have the cojones to come out and say that. The guy is starting to be a man now. He's trying to get out of his father's shadow, hopefully. And, man, the one thing I will say is Chavez, come on, man, you got to shave. Shave those chops, man. It's not good. It's not a good way.
But it wasn't a very attractive look. Just for the record, you mentioned your cousin played in that game. Your cousin, of course, former Oregon State Beaver quarterback Ryan Katz. That was a crazy bowl game, just to reminisce about that real quick. Only a 3-0 game against Pittsburgh, and what I believe is the 75th anniversary of that bowl game. It's been around forever. You can tell just what a geek I am when it comes to college football. I love that stuff like I love boxing. Anything else you want to touch upon in the rave section before we take off?
No, man, happy Father's Day, everyone out there, man. Happy Father's Day to everyone listening, to everyone who follows, pays attention to Leaving in the Ring Radio, to the Boxing Fix, all the boxers out there that we've talked to, or future guy boxers we're going to talk to, and trainers, happy Father's Day. Just have a great day. Be safe out there. It was a good week in the boxing to bounce back from what we can call a bad week in boxing, per se, so great job with everything, man. And just everyone, don't forget Mondays, Noche de Boxeo at 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern. Thursdays, Leave It in the Ring with Dave Glennis and Gabriel Montoya. Same time, 3 hours of Boston Talk there. And UFM Magazine, UndisputedFightMag.com. Get your Undisputed Fight Mag digital online magazine. Do it now. You're a boxing fan, boxing addict, do it all.
In addition to doing the switchboard, David Chen joined us a little bit on the microphone as well, helping to co-host at the beginning of the show. Any last thoughts from you, David?
No, sir. A great show as usual, fellas.
All right.
Thank you,
for
Dave,
all your
for covering
help.
For me.
So
man.
For all of us.
No problem, sir. Anytime.
Absolutely. So for all of us here at Leave It in the Ring Radio on the Boxing Fix, alongside me, Josh McDaniel and David Chen, I'm Joel Sebastianelli. Thanks a lot for listening to The Boxing Fix, where boxing addicts come to get their fix. Happy Father's Day, and remember to support those who support the sport.
Take care, guys.
Take care.